Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We're herding on the Yukon, on the Kuskokwim for salmon. We ask you to stand with us.
Alaska Native advocates rally for climate action in Anchorage. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 20th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Alaska Federation of Natives hosts a session on reporting hate and racism.
I think that doing nothing when incidents of racism occur supports that kind of behavior.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
U.S. Representative Mary Peltola took the stage at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage today to deliver the keynote address. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports from the convention hall, to say it was a warm reception would be an understatement.
Peltola's theme, and the theme of the convention, was the power of unity.
This is what built our republic. This is what democracy is built on. Unity, coming together, compromising, building consensus, building coalitions, working together, seeing each other as humans. Just all of the things that help us gel and work through our problems.
Peltola has been a congresswoman for just 38 days, and she's running for re-election. AFN is traditionally the largest convention in the state. This year, for the first time ever, delegates are hearing from a member of Congress who is, like them, an Alaska Native. The crowd cheered at the mention of her name. Many waved hand fans with Peltola's life-sized face attached. Peltola said she could feel the faith, courage, and wisdom in the room.
I'm so uplifted in this moment because I see the promise of tomorrow. I see it in our children and our grandchildren and all the generations that are going to come after us. And I'm uplifted in this moment because of you.
Peltola mixed loftiness with down-to-earth anecdotes about driving her kids on the school run, fishing, and how her family texts with one another even when they're in the same house. Watching from the back of the room was former legislator Reggie Jewell from Kotzebue. He says Peltola has always been a good communicator, and he was moved by one of her messages, that everyone belongs here.
And I thought that was really cool, because she just kind of, it wasn't about her. She was kind of sending it back.
Some of the more emotional moments weren't scripted. One came after Peltola invited the late Congressman Don Young's family to the stage.
So I don't know if you just caught that, but Joni, Don's oldest daughter, just gave me Don's bolo.
Peltola wore the gift around her neck. It was Young's signature accessory, a beaded Alaska flag bolo tie.
Now I'm a real congressman for all Alaska.
Joni Nelson made the tie for her dad decades ago.
It's kind of like passing the mantle. So I felt it was a nice thing to do, the right thing to do.
Both of Young's daughters say they support Peltola's re-election. The younger sister, Dawn Valeli, says she's not bothered that Peltola is a Democrat.
I think that, like my father, she's focused on the needs of Alaska and of Alaskans. And that's the most important thing, regardless of party.
When Peltola finished speaking, but before she left the stage, one corner of the hall at the Dena'ina Center broke into song. The attendees traditionally sit according to region, and this corner was designated for Peltola's home area, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The song was an Orthodox blessing, wishing her many years. Then, from the Northwest region, a hymn in Inupiaq, one elder led the way, reading the verse from her cell phone screen. When they finished, a hallelujah hymn broke out from the interior section. Peltola stood at the front of the stage, looking over the immense hall, her eyes brimming with tears. Reporting from the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As Indigenous people from around the state gathered at Anchorage's Dena'ina Center for the first day of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention today, more than 100 people rallied in the rain several blocks over. The group of Alaska Native advocates pushed for environmental and climate action. They held signs that said, "Defend the sacred, protect the Arctic," and gave speeches at Town Square Park, noting recent record storms and declines in subsistence foods. Charles Wright with Tanana Chiefs Conference grew up in the Yukon River community of Rampart and spoke about the decline in fish in the region.
Our people are hurting. They're almost starving. Yeah, some people don't have any other means. They don't have stores. They're the ones that need to be taken care of, the ones that we need to have voices for.
The rally was put on by several nonprofit organizations, including United Tribes of Bristol Bay and Native Movement. Rallygoers chanted in opposition to many resource extraction projects around the state, including the Donlin Gold Mine, the Pebble Mine, and the Ambler Road Project. Nawe Tagabon led a chant that played on this year's AFN theme of celebrating our unity.
Unity with the animals. Let me hear us in the denial center. Unity with the animals.
Sharon Hildebrand, vice president of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, was disappointed that there were no panels scheduled at the AFN convention that dealt with impacts to subsistence fishing from climate change. She said she's hopeful that people will support several fishing-related resolutions this weekend.
There's going to be some resolutions on Saturday, and we need you all to stand with us. We're hurting on the Yukon, on the Kuskokwim for salmon. We ask you to stand with us.
While topics related to public safety and infrastructure tend to garner wide support among AFN delegates, climate change has proved to be controversial. At the last in-person AFN convention in 2019 in Fairbanks, delegates debated for over an hour on whether to pass a resolution declaring a climate emergency, with strong opposition from the North Slope delegation. It ended up passing, and the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation ended its AFN membership at the end of the year. AFN delegates will take up resolutions Saturday afternoon. A former Kenai Peninsula borough worker is accused of photographing women and girls without their consent at schools and his home in Soldotna. The charges were filed in Kenai Superior Court last week and detail a 2-year investigation that was put on hold when the lead investigator himself was arrested on child sexual abuse charges. KDLL Sabine Pooks has more.
33-year-old Isaac Davis was arrested Friday on 6 felony charges for allegedly taking illicit photos and videos of a minor at the Skyview Pool in Soldotna, as well as a woman at his home without her knowledge. Alaska State Troopers say the instances are part of a long pattern of behavior. Most recently, they say Davis also took photos of women and girls at a school in Nikiski and at the school pool in Nilchik. Davis is no longer employed at the Kenai Peninsula Borough, which is tasked with doing maintenance work at local schools and facilities like the Skyview Pool. Davis resigned from his position shortly after the investigation began last summer. According to charges, this is what troopers say happened. In July 2021, a 12-year-old girl noticed she was being filmed by a cell phone while she was showering in her swimsuit in the women's locker room at Skyview. The girl reported the incident to the pool lifeguards on staff, who told others and confronted Davis in the hallway. Davis told the lifeguards he had entered the wrong locker room by accident and denied taking photographs. But surveillance video footage reviewed by borough staff and troopers shows Davis attempting to stay out of sight and making over a dozen short trips to the women's locker room, during which he appeared to be using his phone. Troopers found another video showing similar behavior from earlier that month. The same day, Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Administration reported the incident to troopers who served a search warrant of Davis's phone and computer. He told troopers he had been in the women's locker room by accident and that he was using his phone to watch videos, not to film. 2 days later, before the borough could put Davis on administrative leave, he resigned. The charges further detail findings from a Department of Public Safety analysis and report, which included attempts by Davis to delete evidence from his devices. Troopers also found Davis did launch his camera and photo applications on his phone while entering the locker room repeatedly. On his computer, they found photographs of clothed women, including girls, quote, appearing to have been taken surreptitiously, the charges say. That included at a school in Nikiski. Investigators also found Davis had covertly filmed a woman at the Nanilchik school pool in May 2021. Troopers say at an interview at his home earlier this year, Davis admitted to taking photographs from concealed locations, but said it was not his intent to photograph minors. He allegedly told a trooper the pattern of surreptitious photography was, quote, something that just kind of snowballed and I don't know why, the charges say. But the trooper investigation hit a roadblock in October of last year, when then-trooper Benjamin Strahan, the lead investigator on the case, was jailed on his own charges for allegedly sexually abusing two girls. Strahan was placed on administrative leave, and that case is still in court. Troopers say a new investigator on Davis's case retraced many of Strahan's steps to confirm his findings were accurate. They declined to answer questions about Strahan's involvement. Court records show Davis is on supervised release after posting bail Monday. His lawyer declined to comment on the charges. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, students join a last-ditch effort to stop a 300-acre clearcut in Whale Pass.
They've been following this for the last 3 years since it started, so they're quite informed about it. So this wasn't something new.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at NEAAlaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
For only the second time this election season, all four candidates running to be the governor of Alaska participated in a debate Tuesday night. Incumbent Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy is the apparent frontrunner and bore many attacks from two other candidates. In his closing remarks, Dunleavy argued that Alaska is better off today than it was 4 years ago.
Crime is at a 41-year low. Troopers and VPSOs are up. We have a historic PFD. We've cut our operating budget by 10%, other than in education and public safety.
Democrat Les Guerra directly contradicted many of Dunleavy's assertions and painted a dire picture of Alaska. Guerra said high oil revenue driven by the war in Ukraine made this year's historically high permanent fund dividend possible, not the governor.
Governor Dunleavy pats himself on the back for the worst school crisis in Alaska history, for the worst mental health crisis in Alaska history, for rape numbers going up while he's been governor, even though he told you the opposite.
Dunleavy and fellow Republican Charlie Pierce used some of their time highlighting former Governor Bill Walker's use of the veto to slash permanent fund dividends in 2016. Walker, an independent, said he cut dividends amid extremely low oil prices and helped pass legislation to make dividends sustainable. He said now making the dividend predictable is one of the state's biggest challenges.
We've gone through $20 billion of savings in the last 10 years. My concern is with high dividends, right now we have been put on in the express lane for high taxes in Alaska.
Over the one-hour debate, the candidates were asked about abortion rights, missing and murdered indigenous women, and the crash in salmon and crab stocks, among other things. Alaska Public Media, KTOO, and Alaska's news source produced the debate, which aired statewide on television and radio. The full program is available on YouTube and Facebook. The four candidates have all committed to participate in one more candidate forum before Election Day. They're set to appear together during the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage on Saturday. And of course, Election Day is November 8th. The Alaska Federation of Natives is hosting a session on addressing hate and discrimination put on by the Anti-Defamation League tomorrow at the AFN convention in Anchorage. The ADL was founded more than 100 years ago to fight anti-Semitism, but their mission also includes securing fair and just treatment to all, and for its Pacific Northwest office, that includes in Alaska. Regional Director Stephen Paolini and Advisory Board Member Miriam Ahrens say the Anti-Defamation League wants to do more work in Alaska in the future.
Well, racism in Alaska, especially against Alaska Native people, is not new. And I'm really excited that the ADL is expanding its anti-racism work here in Alaska. I've seen a lot more emboldened hate speech. I think that you don't need to look much further than the Anchorage Assembly meetings. And it's really concerning to me. I think that racism has no place in our society, and especially no place in public forums such as the Anchorage Assembly.
Yeah, and I mean, even if we're just talking about the Anchorage Assembly, things in the last few years have gotten, I think it's fair to say, really tense there. But just in general, how have you seen this change in the last few years?
It's definitely more out in the open. When I was growing up, I would hear things in the hallways at school, but I never really heard adults speak openly, say racist things about Alaska Native people. But within the last few years, I've definitely seen a lot more of that, and it's really disconcerting.
Yeah, definitely. Stephen, tell me just a little bit about the Anti-Defamation League, what that is. And then also, is there maybe more of an increased effort to be involved in Alaska here more recently?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for that question. So we are certainly founded in a support for the Jewish community, but we want to work and support all communities. I'm not Jewish myself, but I come to this work with firsthand experience with ADL supporting me when I experienced hate and bias. And over the last year, we've really looked to redouble our commitment to working in Alaska. But one of the key challenges that we have is reporting here in Alaska is really, really sparse. FBI uniform criminal code data showed just 9 incidents of hate crimes last year. And we know that's not indicative of the experience on the ground. And it shows a real gap. And for my role at ADL, we want to help close that by being a source where folks can report when they've experienced hate and bias and get that support that they need. That's my job, is to support victims. And most importantly, make sure that we understand the size and scale of the problem, which is quite quite extreme here and in all communities, really.
When you talk about tools for reporting hate and bias, what does that look like? I mean, what is reporting hate look like when someone's experienced that?
Yeah. So individuals report to ADL for a variety of reasons. Our office has handled a little bit under 500 incidents of hate and bias, and they run the full gamut from, you know, non-criminal incidents that are nonetheless very serious and must be condemned. Just give a quick example. One of our board members here in Alaska was recently victimized by really virulently anti-Semitic flyers that were distributed around Anchorage. And it might not be a crime, but it's really serious and concerning and indicative of a larger trend of toxicity in our discourse and harassment of people based on their identity. And then it ranges all the way up to criminal acts. And folks report to us sometimes because they don't feel comfortable reporting to law enforcement, but other times because they just want to make sure there's an advocate to help work closely with law enforcement to make sure they understand the full context of what's happening in that incident. But we like to see ourselves as sort of an ally and an advocate for people.
Miriam, for you, I mean, you've been to AFN before. This is kind of one of these breakout sessions, right? It's away from the main floor. What do you expect from this? I mean, what do you think it's going to be like, and what do you think people are going to tell you?
I really don't have any expectations. I hope that people are willing to attend and share their experiences and their concerns. I hope that they learn about the ADL's mission and that the ADL learns more about what people are experiencing on the ground here in Alaska. I think that doing nothing when incidents of racism occur supports that kind of behavior. So I think it's really important to stop it when you can. It's poison. It's contagious. And it's not something that I think the majority of Alaskans want to see in our society.
That was Anti-Defamation League Advisory Board member Miriam Ahrens and Regional Director Stephen Paolini.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Alaska's minimum wage will increase by 51 cents next year from $10.34 to $10.85. The minimum wage is adjusted annually based on how much the consumer price index for urban consumers in Anchorage increased the previous year. It increased 4.9% in 2021, which means a 4.9% increase in the minimum wage. The $10.85 per hour wage goes into effect January 1st, 2023. Alaskans voted to adjust the minimum wage annually for inflation in 2014. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough School Board has approved a policy that prevents transgender students from using bathrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identity. The board passed the policy at a meeting last night. All members of the public who spoke about the policy were opposed to it. Morgan Klemmer is a non-binary student at Colony High School. They said the policy would increase feelings of isolation that many trans students already feel.
Every day at school for transgender children, particularly non-binary children like myself, bathrooms are a minefield. Every trip is a reminder that we're not normal. It's another agonizing internal argument, which bathroom do I use? Do I want to use the wrong bathroom or risk getting stared at or bullied?
Klemmer circulated a petition among their classmates in support of creating an all-gender restroom at the school. Supporters have raised more than $5,000 for construction costs. Board member Dwight Probasco asked the board to consider adding language to the policy that would allow for designated all-gender restrooms. They declined to vote on that change and it was left out. Some speakers asked the board to consider the legal ramifications of the policy. Mike Garvey, advocacy director of the Alaska ACLU, referred to legal challenges to similar policies in other states in recent years.
Almost every court to take up bills and policies like this has struck them down, led to the North Carolina governor losing his job, and cost jurisdictions millions.
The policy passed in a 5-1 vote with Probasco voting no. He said he thought transgender students should be allowed to use bathrooms that match their gender identity and that he didn't think the policy would survive legal challenges.
I do believe that this policy is built on sand, and I do not believe that it will stand the test of time, and I do believe that the decision on this will be determined in court.
If the Federal Department of Education's proposed changes to Title IX become finalized, the district may have to allow trans students to use bathrooms that match their identity or risk losing federal funds. Students in the Prince of Wales Island community of Whale Pass are joining a last-ditch effort to save a local hillside from a nearly 300-acre clear-cut. And as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, state forestry officials say they've already addressed the students' concerns.
The letter wasn't an assignment, but Whale Pass School's head teacher, Anthony Cook, says it's an issue close to home for even the town's youngest residents. The proposed sale would take out 292 acres of mixed-species old growth lining the hill above the town of 100. Cook says it could affect the kids' hunting prospects, their jobs at the town's lodge, or even their homes, just 100 feet away from the clear-cut boundary.
It's either them directly or their grandparents.
It's a hot topic in Whale Pass. Residents have voiced strong opposition to the sale boundary, which falls just 100 feet behind many property lines. But there are also bigger fears, exposing homes to landslides, winds, or floods, and damaging subsistence habitats for deer and fish. the state's best interest finding didn't find a cause for concern. The city of Whale Pass sent an official letter of opposition to Governor Mike Dunleavy last month. The city council also approved a resolution opposing the sale, drafted by the homeowners group, the Friends of Whale Pass. Cook isn't surprised his students wanted to join the chorus opposing the sale.
Well, they've been following this for the last 3 years since it started, so they're quite informed about it. So this wasn't something new.
At the end of their letter, the students ask Helge Ing, the state forester, to, as they put it, stand by our governor's slogan of people first instead of corporate profit. The comment period ended on Monday. The students haven't heard anything from the governor's office or the state's forestry division yet, but Cook thinks it's still too early to tell.
I'd be more interested in what the governor's office replies to it than I really don't expect a reply from the state forester.
Greg Staunton, the area forester for the Division of Forestry, says he thinks state forester Helge Ing has read the kids' letter. Staunton read it last week. He says he thinks the kids' issues have been addressed.
Points that were brought up in the letter have been dealt with in our proposed action out there, our forest land use plan, and also in our best interest finding.
As far as concerns about destroying deer habitat, Staunton says there's plans to leave quarters around the creek estuary and wintering grounds for the animals. He also says that his division has responded to the backlash about the clear-cut boundaries that come close to properties. When drawing up the timber sale, Staunton says the Division of Forestry had to make the sale big enough to be worth the cost of roads and other infrastructure needed to access the old-growth stand.
We were trying to recover the most timber that we could in that area while respecting the other resources that are out there.
Staunton says that in some areas, that will mean cutting near property lines, but he says the state has left some buffers around some properties.
We have put in some areas, several hundred feet of retained timber along there based on the terrain and other things like streams that we needed to protect. I don't feel that we have ignored their requests in any manner. We may not have accommodated them to their satisfaction, though.
Since the comment period closed on Monday, the next step for Staunton is to wade through the comments and start sorting through them. No matter the outcome, Cook says writing the letter will be a lesson to the students.
Well, it'll be an object lesson for the students in how their concerns are addressed by the governor and the state forestry division.
A spokesperson for Dunleavy referred questions to the state's Department of Natural Resources. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Wesley Early, and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 45 years. More at alyeskapipeline.com. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.